Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Lore boys, you're hi everybody, welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast. My name is Ethan Palmer. I will be your host this evening. Joining me as always is Two Chin Pete's.
Hey, it's me. I'm trying to get my necklace over my second chin here, but can't.
He's getting too swole at the gym. His second chin is overcoming the power of Christ. Really,
now that they've brought back in the chin machine, there's like a chin waggler thing, which is pretty good. Like, I'm very happy they brought that machine back in with the capacity.
And of course, a man whose chin I haven't seen in years, James Miller.
Yeah, we just found like old videos of me when I was really young, and I have a different chin. I forgot what my own chin looked like.
You've had a beard now for years, so.
for a long time. Yeah, it's bigger than ever. But I'm not trying to double up on my chin. I'm going for like double elbows, double knees. So I kind of like stack my weight a little differently than the average man.
Oh, you want to get cankles? You want to get the extra? Make it. You look like you're wearing baggy pants, but it's just all meat.
Yeah, no, like bell bottoms. Really, I like really
bell bottom
thin
thighs.
Really thin ankles, but fat as fuck knees. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like cool. Inverted bowling pin.
That's what like they call me.
Like a chicken drumstick, really.
Yeah.
That's what you want to be. Yep. Meat on top. Meat on top.
Red hair, just all Buffalo drumstick Jamie.
So let's get ready to tap into the magical worlds of Magic the Gathering. We're going to be talking about the otherworldly entities known as the Eldrazi, specifically the Eldrazi Titans and their broods. This is kind of a pseudo follow-up to the last one. It's more of a parallel story than the Innistrad episode that I released 3 weeks ago, but you will probably gain some context from that other episode, which would be helpful for this one. So
it's recommend. October. It's still kind of spooky though, right?
Exactly. This is, if anything, spookier.
Okay.
Spooky in a different way. I guess Innistrad was werewolves and vampires, and Eldrazi are the Lovecraftian horrors, Eldritch horrors of Magic the Gathering universe. So
growing old and dying alone, the abstract horrors of Lovecraft, right?
Yeah, I mean, literally like descends into madness, right? Like dementia, really awful. So that's what we're gonna talk about. If you haven't listened to the last one, it's recommended reading, not required reading, I'd say. We'll try and give a bit of context throughout the show itself. But with that, we could probably roll right in. So Magic the Gathering, for all the unfamiliars, obviously, tabletop card game. Not like, okay, this, I know what you're thinking. This isn't blackjack, all right? This isn't crazy eights, okay? It gets pretty crazy. But it's a bit more strategy, a bit more nuanced than that.
Yeah.
And all the sets that come out, about four sets a year, usually have stories attached to them. And some of those stories talk about these things called Eldrazi.
The only way you lose... the only way you lose money gambling is buying packs over and over again, trying to get that one card you really wanted, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. And then as soon as you get it, it's banned in standard.
I remember a guy when Dragon Ball Z cards were popular, he bought an entire box and went through it trying to get a level 4 Trunks. And I walked in and I bought one pack and I walked out of there with a level 4 Trunks. And he had all of his little empty packs all around him, and I was the one with the card.
Gambling, baby. Yep. That's very Jamie luck, I believe. As Luis would say, slub luck, I believe.
Right. I love the fact that you said back when Dragon Ball Z cards were popular, which is a thing that you could have made up because I didn't know that ever happened.
You never had DBZ cards?
So, no.
There was like a little scanner that was basically like a plastic that had like a little gap. And as you powered up your character, you moved it up along the side of the card. So like the plastic would block the other numbers and the card in the middle where the gap was would be the current power level. And yeah, that was like one of the mechanics. You could level up your characters from like 1, 2, 3, and 4. There was like a whole battling thing too. I went to tournaments, but I was just awful at it. And a young child, yeah.
Pokemon is like a simplified Magic. I've played the Game Boy Color game, which I think I've mentioned in the past.
That's fine.
And I still own a bunch of Digimon cards. I don't know a single human being on the planet who knows how to play that game. I got the starter kit as a gift at Niagara Falls for some reason, and that was it.
If people were like, hey, Digimon is just made up, like you never actually saw an episode of Digimon, you never actually saw any content of it, I would be really skeptical, but I could be convinced. Like you could double down and like a few beers in, probably convince me that Digimon never happened.
You know? It just gaslights you. It's just like, no. It's not like Pikachu. He's like an alligator, and he's just called Agumon now.
Yeah.
Yeah. As like a dog, dog gets stronger when he puts pants on, and then he turns into a mech.
Yeah. And they could talk sometimes, I think. I don't know. One of them got too big, and the kid wanted to paint him and didn't have enough money to pay for oil-based paint. It was like a plot point.
I don't remember that at all. That's all the kids, a fetish thing.
They got on a train, and then the train went to the digital world. I think, honestly, I'm pretty sure there's a PS1 RPG Digimon game that I still want to play. But
okay, screw it. We're doing Digimon lore, okay? Right?
Yeah, okay.
We're doing a live read of it. No, we're talking about Magic Gathering. Listen to the Innistrad episode for more context, and we have a ton more Magic Gathering episodes. Should be links to our website with all those episodes on it. But you can find the subtitles there, and you should be able to find the episodes by searching that as well, or just searching Magic in your podcast app. It should come up. So what the heck is an Eldrazi?
It's a way to cook your pasta.
A million points to Peter or Jamie, whoever can come up with the name of one of the three that I mentioned last time, because there's three Eldrazi, and you guys will win every game I ever play in the future. You automatically win it over the other one if you can remember one of the three.
One of them at least had apostrophes in there.
Yeah, because they're I can't believe it's not Cthulhu, right?
No
apostrophes, so you're negative points at this point. But
oh no, is it I can't believe it's not Dagon, but it's like K apostrophe T N or N T rather.
Metal Garurumon.
Hakulu.
Yeah. Moana.
Moana. Yeah.
Metal Rock. Metal Garurumon.
Yeah. That's my guess too.
And
Hulu, the streaming service.
Yeah, Hulu.com, which you can't get in Canada.
Can we have a hint? Like,
do you want a hint? I mean,
I
want
to try.
One of them has. Sure. Yeah. I don't even know what to give you as a hint. One of them starts with a K. One of them starts with an E. And the other one starts with a U. The one with a K has two Ks and a Z in it.
Kakaz.
No.
Is that
not even close.
No.
Not even close. Yeah, so let's get into it. The Eldrazi are an unknowably ancient race. They're native to the Blind Eternities, which is the space between realities, chock full of chaotic energy. We've talked about it before as well, right? Yeah, a couple times. That's what planeswalkers are able to manipulate and travel through.
Right. Not to be confused with the Blind Eternies who are suing that damn stoplight that stopped tweeting at it. Yeah.
They're a litigious bunch. Okay, you gotta give them that. Yeah. So the Eldrazi have an aura about them, I guess you could say. Their very nature is anathema to most. They are the embodiment of ceaseless hunger, devouring all mana and life energy they can find. They're broken into three broods, with a titan at the head of each brood. Three titans, as described last time. Kozilek, Titan of Distortion.
That's a Zed one.
That's the Zed one. Emrakul, Titan of Distortion.
Oh, I remember that name,
Corruption.
Actually.
Corruption, excuse me. And Ulamog, Titan of Consumption.
Ulamog.
Now, if you guys, at any point in the episode, lose track of which one's which, because we're going to get into their physiology and the differences between the broods in a bit, and you're trying to remember what the difference between them is, just remember this. Kozilek warps reality. Emrakul warps biology. And Ulamog warps physical properties. Very clear. All right.
You don't have a mnemonic for us?
Is he on like the Home Improvement channel? He warps physical properties. Move that bus.
HGTV. Property Bros with brothers Jonathan and Ulamog.
It's like, well, what we want to do is like tear out this old gyprock wall and put in some new support beam that's incomprehensible to the human eye. Yeah, Ty, that's going to be a great idea.
Yeah. Now, what we're gonna have to do is we're gonna have to tear up this floor and add a new subfloor. What do you think, Ulamog?
Looks like a horn.
How about this walk-in mind torture chamber? Ooh, beautiful.
Yeah. The master bedroom distorts reality and your bodies at the same time.
I added those 3 points because like the lines are so blurred between that reality, biology, and physical properties. Like they could all kind of meet what each one could mean the other in a different circumstance. So I thought it was very silly that it was clarified in the wiki. But those are the three known Eldrazi. So at time of writing, it's unknown if there are more Eldrazi Titans that exist out there, but just have not yet been encountered since they're just like wandering, mostly incomprehensible, you know, entities which just float through the multiverse devouring planes of magic. As I said, they are native to the Blind Eternities, and they don't enter planes in the traditional sense. So there's an in-canon metaphor, which does a really good job of explaining it. The spirit dragon Ugin, who you guys might remember from the last episode.
Yeah, is he not Nicol Bolas's brother or something?
He is, yeah. I don't think I mentioned that last episode, but bonus points to Pete.
Wow. How'd you know that?
Yeah.
He's definitely told me. There's literally no way I ever would have found that out otherwise. Ethan told me, Jamie. That's how I found out.
I must have mentioned it on the last episode. I'll probably do an episode on Ugin someday. Maybe it'll be my next episode if you want to hear it. Make sure to join the Discord, loreboys.com/about, and crunch at us there. So the spirit dragon Ugin compared an Eldrazi titan entering a plane to that of a man sticking his hand into a pond of water. In the metaphor, the man is the titan and the pond is the realm they are entering. The fish
of
the pond...
That's I can't imagine that's what he meant by that. imagine all at once that you're a pond and a man sticks his hand inside you. And that's what it's like if when an Eldrazi enters a plane. Like, okay, Ugin, let's get you to bed.
I do try and dumb it down for you guys. So.
Yeah, we can all imagine a man sticking their hand inside of us, like at this point, I think. But
yeah, I mean, yeah. We've all been there.
Yeah, make me a Muppet, baby.
So we have a man sticking his hand in a pond, a titan entering a realm of magic. The fish of the pond, those who dwell in the plane, can only see the man's hand. So the Eldrazi titans are kind of just the man's hand. Like when you see these like all-encompassing monstrosities towering over the realm. As far as we can tell, it's just like an aspect of like a construct of their presence.
It's like the thing we brought up a bunch of times, like Flatland or whatever, where if everybody lived in a 2D world and you stuck your hand in it, you'd only see circles instead of fingers and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Something passing through it, you just see like the flickers of it going through and changing shape, and you wouldn't be able to understand. You'd never be able to comprehend that it was the shape of a hand from your perspective.
Yeah.
So mortals on a plane can only see a fraction of the Eldrazi Titans, even as their reality crumbles before them. Similarly, each lesser member of a brood is at the same time a part of that greater Titan. The physical forms of Eldrazi drones or processors are simply a further extension of that extra-dimensional being. So the Eldrazi, you have your you know, flagship cards. There's cards for Ulamog, there's cards for Kozilek, and there's cards for Emrakul. And then you have like the Emrakul's Pathfinder or Kozilek's Pathraiser, all these different Eldrazi cards, which are Eldrazi minions. Those aren't like separate minions which the Eldrazi Titan has created. Those are still the Eldrazi Titan, just again taking on like different manifestations within that realm, essentially.
Okay.
I guess if we want to extend Ugin's metaphor a bit, it's like the ice is frozen, and to start, you're only able to kind of work in like a finger at a time or whatever, right? And then slowly you're able to work in more and more as you kind of break up the ice and break up the very reality of that dimension.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking of something much dirtier.
Yeah. I just picture like, you know, like
puppets on the brain, huh?
All those guys at those Magic the Gathering concerts, the tournaments that have their pants down and you can see like the ass crack. So there's just like a really big overweight guy like leaned over into a pond sticking his fingers.
Sticking his fingers into it. Yeah.
This is Magic. I am Ugin playing. Yeah.
Ugin is just like, imagine the aspect, one of the envoys of Ulamog is in just like the ass crack of a man peeking above the waist of his jeans. It's just like
try and imagine a great pond full of Cheeto dust. So the broods, if a little indistinct on purpose, do at least have some defining physical characteristics. So you probably can spot the difference if you know it well enough. And I'll get into. Oh, I can actually show you pictures of what these guys look like. I completely forgot about the props that I brought for you guys. So this one's Kozilek. You'll notice a central theme of tentacles. This is Ulamog. I named that wrong. This is Ulamog. Sorry, Kozilek, Ulamog, and Emrakul.
Well, Emrakul just looks like a jellyfish, like a gigantic jellyfish. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to describe her. Ulamog, take note of the bone plated helm or head. Yeah. And the bisected arms. So he's basically got like two sets of upper arms and then four like forearms with four hands at the end of each of those arms.
Looks like someone just plucked him like a weed from a garden or something.
Yeah, he does. I can kind of see the he's like a tuber or something, right? Like a turnip.
Yeah.
And I think Kozilek maybe the most humanoid form, the body anyway. The head is kind of like
the most comprehensible of all of them.
It's like he has a face where his neck should sprout, you know? Like he's just looking straight up all the time.
But, he's a turtle. He's a shy turtle, essentially, right?
Yeah. Aww. With two big buff arms.
Yeah. Cool. So we'll get into the differences between their progeny. So let's start with Ulamog, if I can find him. So you guys will notice some similarities to the big guy, right? He's got the bony plated head. Yeah. Bisected arms with like recursive fingers, almost, it looks like.
Yeah, he has like a lot of additional knuckles on every finger. They all kind of wrap around.
Yeah.
And then he's got like bell bottom pants but that flare out into like octopus tentacles too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
He's got the cankles.
He's got the
inverse jammy going on.
Yeah. He's got the also like if you were to bend your arm forward in like the crevice on the other side of your elbow, he has second arms coming out of the middle of your arm. Yeah,
out of the joint in the elbow, essentially.
Yeah.
So Ulamog's progeny are characterized by the featureless bony mask, which covers what can be best described as a head. They are the most highly tentacled of the Eldrazi, although that's like stated. I think Emrakul definitely gives them a run for their money. And we'll see why in just a little bit. This is Kozilek. I don't know why he got so small. I can make him big for you guys. So this is Kozilek. You'll notice he shares the similar bisected arms. Mm-hmm. The spawn of Kozilek are usually covered in peepers, though rarely do they have any on the head. I don't know what happened to this image. It got super, super compressed, but there is like an eye in his elbow joint here that you can't make out anymore.
Cool.
They often have large black jagged plates that float around them and share bisecting arms with the Ulamog lineage. So these kind of floating like orbs, stones of Ioun for the D&D fans out there, which float around them. A lot of the Kozilek spawn have this just kind of part of their biology.
If you had an eye on like the inside of your arm, like at the crevice, does that mean instead of blinking, you just have to like move your arms up every 6 seconds?
Yeah, you gotta do reps, man. You gotta do reps. Get in the Discord, join Fit Boys, and we'll keep those eyes moist, okay?
That's my goal. It's like that's why I go to the gym, is keep my eyes moist. They're so dry throughout COVID.
Yeah. Cool. Sorry, it won't let me change anymore.
Technical difficulties. This thing is very cool looking. It's got less fingers than the last one, where it's the split arms at the front just have like four fingers on them instead of what looks like 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, this one's a Kraken.
They're freaky dudes. Yeah. So again, this is spawn of Emrakul. Again, tentacles, but I will have you guys notice the kind of like lattice patchwork skin Kind of like very fibrous and like crisscrossing. That is like a defining characteristic of Emrakul's brood.
Okay.
So Emrakul's.
It's like when you digest something. It's all the cilia or whatever in your intestines. It pulls all the food down and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, and it looks maybe partially digested, to be fair.
Yeah.
Emrakul's children, perhaps the strangest of all, lattice-like flesh and of otherworldly hues, often bright purples, blues, and reds. They possess no discernible sensory organs often and come in indecipherable shape.
Except for this one that clearly has eyes.
Again, often. And this one is not explicitly of Emrakul. This is just kind of a generic... No, they're not all named.
Oh, I see.
But there's a generic Eldrazi, but I pulled it up for the lattice-like structure. And again, they do share a lot of similarities, all of them. But there is another telltale sign in this piece of artwork, which lets you know that it's probably Emrakul, which maybe we'll have uncovered
by the end.
Maybe, actually, super, super spot on, James. Like, unbelievably... Like, really? not even what I was referencing. I don't know if that would tell you definitively that it is Emrakul, but the full moon will definitely come back later. I actually don't think we're going to talk about the full moon in Emrakul today, but now I wish we did. But I was kind of saving it for a potential future episode. But maybe we can briefly talk about it a bit later.
Okay.
For now, though, we can talk about what they share in common anyway. And I can stop sharing this. I don't got any more good ideas. Time for you guys to have to be like the listener and imagine what I'm saying.
Aww.
So while each brood is unique, they're cousins for sure. There are some consistent lines through each design. All, or at least most Eldrazi, have a proboscis located somewhere near a joint. Sometimes it's a knee joint, sometimes it's a jaw joint. It seems to just depend. And they're all, a lot of them have tentacles and, you know, weird fleshy bits, things like that.
Proboscis, like the straw organ on a bug, basically, like a mosquito or a butterfly.
Yeah, exactly. They use it to drain life essence out of victims and feed that back to the host. Again, they feed on mana and life essence.
Did you guys see that gif that was going around of the proboscis of the mosquito searching for a vein under the skin? And you could just see like the proboscis like probing around until it eventually found a vein and started drinking.
Oh, yeah.
It's really unsettling. Cool. Yeah.
How'd they get that angle, I wonder?
I don't know. It looks like it's like they just removed the skin and you're looking underneath the skin. It's really weird.
Oh, yeah. The Bill Gates microchip has a selfie camera on it. That's probably how they shot that.
You just get all the boomer shots of like the low angle camera, but it's just a mosquito's face. I'll show you my proboscis. Please respond.
I'll try and find it and post it in the Discord. So go to loreboys.com/about and get in that Discord. And you too can see my proboscis.
That's not a threat for our lawyers, for the record.
For our blind attorneys.
We support the differently abled on this show, and we of only course. Hire blind attorneys. Do you guys want to try and get canceled? We can try and gender these Eldrazi if you guys want.
Sure, dude. Let's do it.
Jellyfish is a female.
Jellyfish is a female, says Jamie. What about the other two? What about most humanoid figure and the turnip?
Most humanoid man.
I'm going to say it's a guy because it's got broad shoulders and like kind of... It does have like a high armored neck sort of thing, I want to say.
Unless
they are all gendered at all times depending on when they enter a plane and they materialize as something when they go in, where they are all of them all at once within the blind eternities, and then they manifest as like, ah, yes, my male form, which is the one we currently have.
Ah, yeah, the big dick Eldrazi is here.
The turnip?
Oh, no, it's the bisexual one, where it has like a fucking denim vest covered in pins on it. You're like, oh, no.
The turnip looked at least half man. He looked like a man that was pulled from the ground, like a mandrake from Harry Potter series or something.
Very that screaming thing?
Very mandrake-like.
Yeah.
You guys nailed it. Once again, I am floored. To me, to most people, they appear to be pretty genderless. Kudos to the brave researcher who tried to sex them. At the same time, this being the Magic the Gathering fandom, there's been a lot of arguments about pronouns used to describe the Eldrazi.
Wow, what a pointless thing to fight about.
Right. We're talking about the Magic the Gathering fandom here, so as a member of it, you have to understand that sometimes arguments about arbitrary words in a in the description of how a card works are very important.
If you refer to this picture of a jellyfish as he, I'm going to flip the fucking table, dude.
Yeah, exactly. So there are some inconsistencies in official sources, too. Some places say he, some places say she. I'm going to try and use they, them, because they seem like they, thems to me. The most recent canon is Ulamog and Kozilek. So humanoid form and turnip are he, him. And Emrakul uses she, her. So three for three, you guys nailed it. Don't know how, but you did it.
You told us one was a female. You said you called her her. And
oh, did I?
Yeah. And then the other two, they have the bodies of dudes at this point, of typical dudes. They got the
They've all been banned off Twitter, but we did discover their pronouns prior.
Yeah.
To
that.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
They made Jack Dorsey go insane.
So the Eldrazi, maybe unlike some internet arguers, are intelligent in at least some capacity.
Got him.
Oh. That whole pronoun bit was to just set up that sick roast on people who argue on the internet.
And go ahead, argue with us, because you're just stepping into our trap, baby.
Oh yeah. So while in general unfathomable, the telepath Jace Bellerin managed to communicate with a conceptualization of Emrakul within his mind at some point. So Jace Bellerin, we talked about in one of our first episodes of Magic Gathering, not our first, I think our third, maybe.
He got bullied like till his puberty dropped.
He did get bullied. He is like the edgy smart boy, like boy incel genius character. Some incel vibes for sure, but they all have a little bit of that in them.
I think we talked a lot about him being an incel that episode. That rings a bell in my
very
head.
Very, very possible.
He was just like a playful. He was like a playful prankster because he hung out with Chandra and Liliana, yeah. And I Vezner.
He was and he's huge incel vibes. That's from the that's from another series. Anyway, we've done a lot of Magic the Gathering at this point. It's hard for me to keep all the lines straight, honestly. So the conceptualization within Jace's mind acknowledged that they did not realize that the telepath existed, and that what Jace had seen was just an attempt of Jace's own mind to conceptualize something that could not be understood otherwise. So by that logic, it's if you're kind of conceptualizing them with a dick, then they got a dick. Otherwise, they don't. Since they're just these like manifestations of something incomprehensible into a real space. It's like the viewer's mind, which, you know, fills in those blanks because it can't handle the empty space. Okay. So that's where you get these kind of like tentacles and flowing patterns and things like that. And they're able to affect the universe in that way.
Jace just can't understand anything. It's like, no, I saw within its mind. It's got a hell of a hog on it. Don't worry.
They immediately goes to the internet forums and starts furiously typing. Yeah. So it's almost like observing the absence of the Eldrazi almost manifests them. If an Eldrazi twists reality in the woods, but there's no one around to see it, does the plane still collapse in a flash of blinding white light? You know, nobody really knows.
And does it?
So they
all the mimes driven mad, just like, ah!
Yeah, exactly. too much arguing. So they do consume planes of magic, which we did discuss in the Innistrad episode when Sorin, Ugin, and Nahiri first found the Eldrazi. They had just devoured an entire plane, at which point they usually like disappear in a flash of white light, essentially.
Okay.
So they'll tear at kind of the fabric of reality by eating the mana or the magic that makes up each plane, until there's not enough left to sustain it, at which point it just like collapses in a flash of light and they move on to the next one.
Now they're not evil from what I'm gathering, right? Like just they're kind of like a force of nature. Yeah, it's like a glacier or like an earthquake. It just kind of destroys everything in front of it, but it's kind of agnostic.
Yeah, exactly that. Like they don't even like Emrakul acknowledged Jace at this point, and Emrakul again probably won't get to it on this episode just because it was running like way too long. I had to cut a lot. But Emrakul does seem to have the most awareness of others, of like mortal beings. Kozilek and Ulamog never communicate. So no one ever communicates with the other two Eldrazi Titans the way that Jace communicated with Emrakul. They are known to give visions to people sometimes, and there are people who describe hearing whispers like after prolonged exposure to Eldrazi Titans, but like what those whispers say, or again, if it's just their mind filling in blanks that it can't hear all of a sudden, it's really hard to kind of parse out.
Right.
So, for example, the vampire Drana has visions revealing that the Eldrazi of Ulimog's lineage knew that the Eldrazi shouldn't be on Zendikar. We'll get into why they're on Zendikar in a bit, but we did mention on the last episode that Sorin traps them there with Ugin and Nahiri. So while they're trapped there, a vampire on the plane basically gets a vision that shows them that like the Eldrazi know that they shouldn't be there, shouldn't be trapped there, kind of thing. Another one, caught in Kozilek's reality warping field, General Tazri has a vision in which Kozilek obliterates the Gatewatch, who we'll get into who the Gatewatch is in a bit, but it's Jason, Chandra, and some other people, proving that the Titans aware of the Planeswalkers at the very least. The fact that he, like, this vision came from him, in theory.
Well, he is just assuming that it's not, I guess you would have to just, like, assume that is a thing trying to tell you something, like some sort of wicked vision of the future, opposed to your brain just being terrified and you having, like, an unrelated nightmare, like, while psychically linked with a monster, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What if you just, like, always heard Amaranth's ASMR streams everywhere you went? Like, that was the whispers. That wouldn't be so bad. I could deal with that.
I've never heard one, but I can only assume it would drive me mad.
I watched some with some people in the Discord. One of the guys recommended it to me, and we streamed it to the server. And I was like, it's a weird noise. It's kind of hypnotic. It is just like lip smacking and whatnot. But like I can get how that could be kind of relaxing.
My favorite move of hers is that she made it so she's like, I'm going to make it so I don't have one woman doing it. I have two women doing it. And the way that she did it is she set it up so she was on the left ear and the right ear, and she would do it to the left ear, and then the right ear would be like a 30-second delay of whatever she was doing. So effectively, she was like making it feel like there was two people there, but it was just her and then like her 30 seconds ago. So honestly, pretty innovative in the SMR scene, I got to say. To have a live show like that... impressive.
We're talking about like Eldritch horrors that like bend reality and devour entire realms of existence, and this conversation is making me uncomfortable. I know nothing about this. Okay, I'm too boomer for your sex streams, James. Please keep them to your episodes. Okay,
honestly, don't even watch them that much. But every time I turn it on, I'm like, how has she brought it to the next level? She's just always innovating.
she keeps ratcheting it up. I don't get it.
She's a leader in the industry, I swear.
So finally, when doing what they do best and consuming planes, each of the three broods has a particular effect on the landscape it leaves behind. This is the point in the episode where I remember I did have more visual cues to give you guys, but I clearly have not prepared them. So I'll describe them for you. Ulamog, Warper of the Physical, if you'll recall, leaves behind a white coral-like substance. So he kind of turns the entire plane into like this like devoid, barren coral reef, like a bleached reef.
I was gonna say it's like what currently happens basically with pollution.
Exactly, yeah. Kozilek, Warper of Reality, is known to leave behind formations that resemble colorful bismuth crystals. So for anyone unfamiliar with bismuth, it's a crystal which forms naturally in the shape of squares. Very cool to look up.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So basically like the entire ground, like behind in the wake of one of Kozilek's brood, will just show like these like crystal rainbow square patterns all over the place, just kind of like branching out. Amrakul, Warper of Biology, is known to leave behind yellow dust, which can transform the very scenery into flesh and blood.
Yeah.
So you'll be walking along behind Amrakul, the jellyfish, and you know, the land beneath you will go, "Hey, I'm lying here." To which point you will, of course, reply, like, "I'm walking here."
It's yellow dust, and then like when you touch it, you turn into. Or
like, no, like the ground is breathing when Emrakul leaves, and there's hairy bits and there's bony bits and there's fleshy bits, you know.
Yeah.
It's real gross.
I don't like that one.
You use your coupon code Emrakul on manscaped.com to clean up your the dirty hairs growing out of the ground.
Yeah. Dirty son of a bitch.
You need the lawnmower 4.0 to mow your actual lawn of all the hair from it.
So, like I said before, it's unknown when they awoke, where they came from, how long they had been destroying planes before they were found by the band of three planeswalkers. Their insatiable hunger would crack open entire realities to drain them of the marrow that was their magic essence and leave nothingness in their wake. Stopping them for a time was a monumental task. We'll go beyond stopping them for a time right after the break.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millennia ago, three planeswalkers decided to do their best to rid the multiverse of the threat of the Eldrazi. Ugin, the Spirit Dragon, Nahiri, the Lithomancer, and Soren Markov of my last episode, Fame, were the ones to take on the task. We did talk about it on the last episode a little bit, at least the trapping of these Eldrazi.
Like
under the sea with a cage of Zeus's lightning.
Where it is better.
That's Disney's Hercules.
Where it is wetter, where it is better, under the sea. Yeah, that's exactly what they decided to do.
And then along came Soren.
He hurled his thunderbolt.
Welcome back to the Lore Boys. We're talking about the friggin' Eldrazi still. James, you could not be further off, I guess, because it's really under a mountain, Mount Akum, or a range of mountains.
Mount Akum?
On the subject of Amaranth.
Mount Akum, of course.
The Lithomancer we established was I don't remember if it was a dude or a chick, but they could manipulate rocks, right, and create these like gigantic pillars of stone that they used to lock in some aspect of one of the Eldrazi, like within the tomb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or all three of them get trapped there. I guess half of the amount of points that I offered you guys last time, if you can remember the plane that they get trapped on, it's Nahiri's native plane. There's another famous planeswalker from there named Nyssa, who we'll talk about in a bit, who ends up joining the Gatewatch.
I think talked about it probably 40 minutes ago at this point, and I've completely forgotten.
Delta Airlines.
I don't think I've mentioned it on this episode. Maybe I have. Maybe I let it slip. Like I let it slip that Emrakul used she/her pronouns. But I definitely mentioned it on the last episode. I've mentioned it before as well.
Is it Zendikar?
Zendikar. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because you did mention it earlier. Sorry. I was like dredging the bottom of the pond that all of their hands are now stuck in.
Are now in.
I'm dredging the bottom of my memories for that. So now they've all got like one hand stuck in Zendikar.
Exactly. I'm so glad you used that metaphor. You guys are it's really going to feel like you guys read my script before, because I kind of mentioned that in a little bit. We get in a bit of Lore Boys canon in a second here.
200 episodes, you'd think that we'd learn to cooperate eventually.
Yeah.
Wait, don't tell them that it's a 200th. We're going to do the actual 200th later.
Now the Lore Boys is like a middle-aged lady where it's just like, oh no, we're not 200 episodes. It's rude to ask a podcast how many episodes you've done.
No, but we're 201 episodes, but when you look for the 200th episode, you just see like an empty void that your mind fills with tentacles, essentially.
Right, of course. Yeah.
They're on Zendikar. They trap the three of them there. They decide to trap the three of them there. Again, listen to our Innistrad episode if you want a bit more detail on it. But they decide to trap them instead of destroy them. And it's Ugin who is the one who counsels that, says, you know, we should trap them, we shouldn't kill them.
Was he improvising? And he was just like, no, it'll be fine. We've got a use for them later. And then like, like what? Trust me.
there's a ton of like really fun tinfoil hat conspiracy, and like one of them is or a lot of them actually involve killing using the Eldrazi to kill Nicol Bolas, who Pete spoiled as his brother, or maybe apparently I spoiled as his brother to Pete at some other point.
how would I have found out?
I don't know. Talk with all your Magic the Gathering friends, Pete. Come on,
you.
So like one of them is really cool. We've talked about the plane Ixalan on the show. I don't think we've ever done like a proper episode on it. Maybe we haven't, but it's the plane with the vampire conquistadors who ride dinosaurs. It's notable because you can't planeswalk off of Ixalan unless you have a particular artifact, basically. So like Jace Bellerin gets stuck there at some point. So there's like fan theories where like Ugin was planning on trapping Nicol Bolas on Ixalan, where he couldn't planeswalk out of, and then freeing the Eldrazi to consume Ixalan, destroying Nicol Bolas with the plane whenever, because he's not strong enough to defeat Nicol Bolas. All fan theories. I'll say my Lore Boys canon is going to take the simplest approach, which is exactly your metaphor, Pete. Imagine you're a man standing with your hand in a pond. And I know this is complex, Peter. Okay, so do try and keep up with me here, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Somebody cuts your hand off. You can walk away with a bloody stump, right? But if all the fish work together and swim down while holding your hand, you're stuck at the pond, right? Like, you can't go to another pond, basically.
Right.
So I thought the really simple Lore Boys canon would be by trapping the manifestations on the plane. They're actually trapping the Eldrazi, where Ugin might fear that if you destroyed them, they would just manifest on another plane somewhere else and keep doing what they were doing before.
Right? Okay, get it, but I'll listen back in post and see if I can.
So, Jamie, you are a man at a Magic the Gathering concert. Okay. Okay. Jamie,
Dory is one of the Eldrazi, and it's the Eldrazi of short term memory loss, and she just wants to swim down. Okay.
Cool.
Do you think, therefore, you am Jamie?
Yeah.
Okay. Be am, and now be am with hand in pond. Good.
I can see it. Yeah, his face is getting flushed. I can see he's thinking.
Too flushed. Turn it off.
My face is red. You guys are working me too hard on this thing.
We make you turn on your lights, and you get sunburns whenever we make you record with us. Basically,
legitimately. I came straight from a work meeting. That's the only reason my lights are on right now. Usually, I'm for recording. Yeah.
Got that 60-watt bulb to look like a professional.
Exactly, yeah.
I need SPF 60 for the 60 watts, dude.
Yeah. Just put it on the bulb. It's easier.
Oh, true. That's smart.
Block the light on the way out.
Why don't they just launch sunscreen into the sun?
Well, that's how just to go off on a fucking tangent here quickly, there was like some stupid Bill Gates project that was to like blast chalk dust into the atmosphere or whatever, which would help cool the planet by reflecting sunlight, but we should just do that with sunscreen instead. He's clearly an idiot.
What's the SPF on chalk?
Okay, all the kids,
a lot of it.
All the kids who are late for class got to take the chalkboard erasers, get launched into space, and bang it out up
there. Oh, clap them all at the same time. It's like that if you all jump, can you move the planet sort of thing. Yeah. It's like if all the kids clap the chalkboard erasers at the same time. Of course, everybody's got a smart board now. We're talking like boomers. But all the chalk dust to cool off the planet by that 1.5 degrees.
If you all jump, can you move the planet? Or if you all swim down, can you trap these crazy large unknowable beasts.
So regardless of why the three planeswalkers swim down, trap the Eldrazi on Zendikar, right? We talked about it last episode, so again, if you want to hear more details on it, basically they used Zendikar because it was less magic and very diverse ecosystems, lots of life, so they used it as bait, successfully trapped them in what would come to be known as the Eye of Ugin, which was guarded.
Sorry. Maybe Ugin just has like a stepmom MILF fetish that he's not willing to say, where you've got like the hand, it's you've got like Ulamog's hand trapped in the sink. It's like, help me, Step Ugin. that makes a lot more sense.
Help me, Step Eldrazi. That's hard to say.
That'll honestly, now the next time I see one of those videos, it's so like, why are they? They're not actually stuck, but it's because they're sticking their hand into another world. And okay, this will help.
Yeah, the fish in the washing machine are swimming down, so the stepmom can't get out.
Yeah, the setup for those is always so funny because I don't think there has ever been a human being with one hand stuck in a kitchen sink in real life. It is entirely a fictitious scenario.
Saying never, it's got to have happened.
I don't know if it's ever happened and then someone fucked them, though.
No, definitely also has never happened. That one, for sure not.
Oh, you're like, so confident now, all of a sudden.
I absolutely am.
Like,
I absolutely am.
Working on the garbage disposal, and you got your wedding ring on, and it's stuck, and you don't want to move too quick because it's like a bunch of machinery down
there. That was the final destination.
Sinks were invented in ancient Rome, man. Like, they've been around for so long.
Somebody has a garbage disposal invented.
Counterpoint, fucking's been around longer. So it might have happened.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
Oh shit!
You got like a cave. You've got like a big titty cave lady trapped in like a bowstring or whatever.
Yeah.
Hand under a pebble, like.
Yeah. It's just under a big rock. Yeah.
gutting a saber-toothed tiger gets stuck in the rib cage, right? So they trap them in what would come to be known as the Eivugan, which was guarded from tampering by locks. And the locks were, if you guys recall, that you
stone
need
pillars
opened with keys.
Well, those are Hedron. Locks are opened with keys. The keys to these locks are opened with, you need three planeswalker sparks, and you need Ugin's magic breath, his invisible dragon breath, to open the Eye of Ugin. Just to ensure that, like, hey, can't escape without us three here. We're the only three planeswalkers who know about this place. I'm the only planeswalker who's got the invisible dragon breath, so we're covered, right? We'll see in a bit that they didn't do a good job making sure that nobody could unlock these locks. Confined by the magic of the network of Hedrons, which are those stone, like, it's like two pyramids, like, ass to ass, which, like, float in the air, the stone Hedron.
You know what? I knew exactly what you're talking about, but that's the funniest way to say it.
Two pyramids, ass to ass. Yeah. I don't know.
I didn't even
the mummies would have wanted it. Help me, step mummy. Confined by the magic of the network of ass to ass pyramids and the imprisonment spells, the Eldrazi fell into harmless dormancy beneath the great supervolcano on the continent Akum, or Atime.
Right.
The planeswalkers disbanded, with Sorin and Ugin leaving Zendikar, while Nahiri remained to watch over the prison. Despite the powers invested in the trapping and confinement of these forces, something sinister still leaked from within. The noxious force of Ulamog was not properly contained, and it soon seeped into the locals' drinking water.
Oof. Oh, this is the yellow dust and the flesh warping one, right?
No, Ulamog is physical warping.
Oh, he's going to leak through the faucets and change his tiles or something like that.
It just redecorates, with Prawn HGTV.
Leaking into the drinking water was a metaphor. In case that wasn't clear, Peter, I know the metaphors have been a struggle for you all episode, so... really just to say there's like a gas, like there's radon leak, and it's eldritch horror gas that makes you go insane.
Metaphors are hard. Why not just use similes? Because you get a like or as and it really like denotes, like, I know you're not being serious.
Okay.
You know?
the noxious force of Ulamog was not properly contained, and it was like it soon seeped into the locals' drinking water. Better?
Cool. Yeah, that's
better.
That's
much clearer.
You put a lighter up to your faucet, and then your entire house just like changes shape and then crumbles into the earth.
Yeah, the walls just start melting, and you have a good acid trip, basically. So the site of the prison had been carefully chosen. The mountains of Akum were hazardous beyond reason and were deemed inhospitable for simple folk. The planeswalkers, of course, had overlooked just how hardy a native population of humans could be.
Because Amaranth's at the top and there's like 100,000 Turkish dudes trying to get to the top of the sub-goal. Mount of Akum, dude.
It is the Akumers.
Yep.
I assume that's like another sex thing that you're bringing onto my wholesome spooky podcast.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Confident. Yes.
I don't know. Amaranth turkeys, I guess. I don't know.
No, Turkish, because they're like, you can't get porn real easy in Turkey, so they watch the Twitch where you got the nice lady with the big boobs and the doing the whispers.
Oh, does she have big boobs? Damn. Okay. The people living in the mountain soon were besieged by visions of Ulamog, of the reality warping powers he promised, and soon they began to worship those sinister whispers from beneath the earth. What I had mentioned before, they just start like hearing whispers. They become kind of a cult devoted to an imagined deity of the mountains. They establish a temple near the site of the prison and begin performing rituals inspired by their growing madness. So they're losing it. You hear voice in mountain, you think it must be God. I'm simple man.
Like I've never read it, but this is like at least the title of the Lovecraft story, the At the Mountain of Madness or whatever it is so yeah. That very makes sense. Is like they just like transplant that in, or at least yeah. The title of which into that. Like, again, haven't read it, don't know the similarities.
This is a super volcano that's in Antarctica, where but very similar with the square shapes where they're flying a plane and they come across this mountain range. This is the Mountains of Madness. They come across this mountain range and they just seem like all like impossibly cubic and like stretching into the sky for infinity as they're kind of coming up on this mountain range from where Cthulhu, who I believe is trying to escape Rialathep, is fleeing.
Did you read that? But,
that is one of the few Lovecraft books I read, but I read it years ago, so I'm probably butchering it. But
sounds cool.
It is cool. I did Lovecraft last year. You can check out that episode, and maybe I'll do more Lovecraft someday.
I'll give it a listen. I've never heard it before.
So yeah, there's these humans who get poisoned by the whisperings of the Eldrazi, one of the Eldrazi under the mountain, begin performing these rituals. The cultists avoid the notice of the increasingly reclusive Nahiri. I guess I don't know if she's getting bored over time, just, you know, nothing to do but watch the horrible eldritch abominations under the mountain. And over time in multiple generations, their rituals start to prove effective in loosening the bonds of the Eldrazi prison. So the Eldrazi prison is built where all ley lines of the plane connect. So it's like the most magic, powerful point on the plane is where the Eye of Ugin is located. Right. Ley lines, for anybody who can't remember, they're just lines of magic which flow through all land in the Magic the Gathering universe. So these people being so close to such a point, devising rituals with an intent of freeing, you know, Step God, who's stuck in the mountain hole, essentially, bent over looking dummy thick. So they got their rituals. and they eventually start working. I would like to say, again, just Loreboy's canon, maybe, that it's just the byproduct of being so close to that central point of magic, where like the magic flows from it, and if you wish upon a star hard enough, your dreams can come true.
Yeah, okay.
So with these disturbances, ripples shook Zendikar, and Eldrazi drones began to awaken throughout the plain. The brood lineages had appeared, and they tore through Zendikar, devouring its mana and slaying its inhabitants. So it starts as like small spawn, basically, like little, think of the little exploding flood from Halo, things that look like that, like size of your head, kind of going through the forest and like preying on rabbits, getting slowly, slowly stronger, and just like manifesting more and more outside of the prison and slowly building strength. But the Titans are still trapped. So like the larger manifestations are still trapped under the mountain.
Okay, they're sending out envoys to learn of this plane, stepmoms, basically, and grow more powerful.
Exactly, yeah. They're clicking those ads, hot stepmoms in your area, and they're out in search for them, basically, killing every rabbit they find on the way. Nahiri calls for aid from Ugin and Sorin, though neither comes to help her. The latter, we know why. The Ugin, I won't get into it right now. It's not important. Alone, besieged, the planeswalker got to work and was successful in identifying the break in the Hedron network. So she sees that, like, hey, these goddamn ruffians, cultists, have been messing with my Hedrons. So she sets them all back up straight. She's able to repair it, returns the Eldrazi to their sleep for a time. There's still probably some Eldrazi, like, kicking around on the plane, but they're kind of cut off from their host, so they're easier to kind of deal with, right?
Do they draw magic directly from the manifestation in the plane? So like if you've got the, because she obviously like is, she did the whole there's your problem right there thing and then fixed it, sort of like method. Did that weaken the Eldrazi that were now like roaming around now that have been cut off from their like source? Because they kind of appear through dimensions, right?
Yeah, as near as I could tell, it didn't weaken any of the existing ones. So if there was a really powerful Eldrazi being which had spawned, it would still be a fight for Nahiri to conquest, like vanquish it. Nahiri's a planeswalker, a powerful wizard, you know, all encompassing, can leap between realities, can probably deal with most of the chaff, if you will.
Okay, yeah.
Anything but a direct Titan assault and like wave after wave after wave of armies, she could probably handle. So I'd say it probably didn't weaken any of those, but probably just cut them off from producing more.
Okay.
So Eldrazi are colorless, which I've talked about before on the show. Probably should have talked about it on this episode, but all the five types of magic in Magic the Gathering, you know, white, blue, black, red, and green are all derived from particular types of lands, which you tap when you play Magic the Gathering. Eldrazi use a specific color of mana, which is called colorless. And it is a very semantic thing, but it is a color of mana. It has a specific symbol and you do tap it, but it is the colorless color. So,
okay.
So where they draw their mana from, where they draw their magic from, is again completely alien. No other card does this. Like no other, like artifacts can generate colorless mana, but they, like no other cards use it in the way that Eldrazi do. So like the entire, just trying to understand like, oh, how would they have, you know, appeared on the plane when a planeswalker can pull in a lion from a savannah in the savannah dimension to fight her battles? How the Eldrazi kind of do it is completely kind of unknown and unknowable.
Okay.
I just thought about the logistics of that, that like a lion's hanging out with all his friends and just falls through the ground and he's like in a battlefield. Like,
yeah. Fight my battles for me. It's like, yeah, I accidentally grabbed a male. All they do is like sit around and wait for food to be brought to them all day.
But the Eldrazi have like a blank check mana, basically. They just like kind of write in whatever they need.
No, so there is cost. That's it. So, like, if you have an island, you can tap an island for one blue mana. You can get like a land card, which you can tap for one colorless mana. And where, like, the island's mana, the blue mana is the symbol of a teardrop or a water drop.
Yeah.
The colorless or devoid mana is just like this, like abstract diamond shape, essentially.
Okay.
And people might not like the comparison, but in Pokemon there was a colorless mana as well, like a colorless energy card, but it was, you could get like double, so it would be like for like for the normal Pokemon or whatever, if you needed X amount, like it was like a super cheap version of the mana, but not tied to a color.
Yeah, you can only use it for normal type Pokemon.
And then sometimes, like a like say like a fire type Pokemon would have an attack that would need two fire energies and then two whatever energies.
Whatever, so
like,
energy.
The colorless would be really good for filling in those gaps because you could just get double fast kind of thing. Yeah.
I mean, for that part of it, you didn't have to say it was Pokemon. You could have acted real smart because that's also how it works in Magic. You'll have like two color and then it'll show like two like fire symbols, like for the red mana. And then it'll just show like a circle with the number two in it. And that just means two of any other color of mana. Doesn't matter what color.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So for the devoid mana, if you're some of the cards will require you to pay a colorless mana specifically, which you need to tap specifically for.
Okay.
So Nahiri put the Eldrazi back to sleep, you know, turned their mobile back on, sang them a lullaby. cleaned up the house,
gently tucked their hands back into the sink, just like
and she's realizing that things are kind of falling apart, and like this is probably a threat and something that needs to be addressed. She had called for help and nobody came. If it happens again, like, is she gonna be on her own? So she goes in search of her old companions. She'd only find her own imprisonment. We know what happens there. Check out the Innistrad episode for details. I'll say for the last time, maybe.
Yeah.
With Nahiri gone, other powers arrived. While Nahiri was gone, trapped in the Hell Vault on Innistrad, the planeswalker Sarkhan Vol had been ordered to travel to the Eye of Ugin by none other than Nicol Bolas himself, current big bad of the MTG universe, who we've referenced a few times now. And I really don't get into the reasons why. It's going to take like a whole episode on probably Sarkin Vol, which would eventually, which maybe need a lead up from Nicol Bolas.
I was about to say, I love how Nicol Bolas, as like the big mysterious bad guy of MTG, has also been like the big mysterious bad guy of all our episodes, because we have like fucking 10 now and have never touched him. He's just always kind of like on the periphery of the lore boys haunting us.
we've touched him a bit. It's like, it's a that's like a definitely a multi-parter, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If Elspeth took, what, six parts?
Five episodes or something.
Five episodes,
four?
Then...
I think four? Do we get it?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
One, yeah. I mean, Nicol Bolas would take a lot, so I think that's just the only reason why I haven't. And it's just, he's probably one of the more known characters, so less interesting for me to want to talk about, maybe. But I will do him someday for sure. But yeah, he sends Sarkin Vol, one of his lackeys, one of his minions, a planeswalker who's capable of transforming into a dragon, basically. Sends him to the Eye of Ugin, where he's just left to stew. He's left here for a long time, indeterminate amount of time, I guess I should say. Slowly descending into madness while standing guard over empty halls at the beck and call of his master. He takes to speaking to himself and hallucinating over the years spent alone until one day another visitor arrives. Chandra Nalar, someday pyromancer of the Gatewatch, appears at the Eye of Ugin. Again, probably need a Chandra episode at some point, probably need another Jace episode at some point, probably need a Gideon Jura episode at some point. But these are all... For people in the Magic the Gathering game, you probably recognize these names. They are known as the Super Best Friends, where they're all planeswalkers. They form something called the Gatewatch, which is like the Avengers of the Magic the Gathering realm, essentially.
Right, yeah.
Chandra is red aligned. She's a pyromancer. She appears at this location, unrelated to the arrival of Sarkin Vol. She had been following the location marked on a scroll she had found, which had led her here to Zendikar. Sarkin, in a moment of lucidity, decided to give her the tour and led her deep into the heart of the eye and explained what it was, what he had gleaned over his time spent here. So it's like, yeah, you know, this is my Eldritch Horror prison. I've been here for some time. I'm the only guy, you know, this is, that's the washroom. If you need to go, there's a
cafeteria. My bed over there. It's just like a shifting slab of rock on milk crates.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't make it. I wasn't expecting company, but,
I've been awake for some amount of time. I don't really know how long.
So Chandra, nodding politely, was maybe a bit surprised when her host transformed himself into a dragon, intent on killing Chandra and sacrificing her to the voice within the mountain. Seems like Sarkin... hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Man, I just asked if I could use the washroom, okay?
It's like sometimes, like the waiter says, like, enjoy your meal, and you say, you too, and you're like, oh, shit. Or like sometimes you're like... Someone turns into a dragon, tries to kill you, and they're like,
tries to do like an unknowable voice underneath the restaurant. It's like,
you have to put a sign on the door that it says washroom is for sacrifices only, basically.
Yeah.
It's like a little yellow sign with a goat with a knife next to its neck.
Yes, so it seems like he succumbed to the same madness that overtook those cultists, and it's like, I gotta free the voice of the mountain, I gotta sacrifice this planeswalker to him. At roughly the same moment, by pure providence, another planeswalker appears, Jace Bellerin. He'd been following the directions on the same scroll that Chandra had used, something simply called the Dragon Scroll. There's not much about it. Again, I could go into more history, but Chandra steals it from a place, ends up losing it, saved by Gideon. Gideon helps her escape. Gideon tells her to go look for the thing on the scroll. Jace also meets Gideon, finds the scroll, decides to go look for the thing. They both end up here.
Okay. Where does, by the way, like, this lore, it's so in-depth and, like, multiple timelines all weaving together. Is this, like, a series of books? Is there, like, a Magic the Gathering, like, compendium out there? Or, like, what's going on?
Yeah, so for a long, long time, they used to do they would publish a novel with each set release. Like, okay. They had kind of a rotation of authors that they would use to, like, write these books and write these storylines. And they do it in blocks. So each set has a block. We talked about the plain Innistrad, and then we kind of butted up to, like, we talked about Innistrad and Avacyn, and kind of where the Eldrazi come into play in regards to Innistrad is called Shadows Over Innistrad, the set, which released at the same time as Eldritch Moon. So I showed you guys last time a picture of two angels, Bruna the Fading Light and Giselda the something else. Maybe I'm getting this mixed up.
Brunilda, where they get fused together.
Exactly. So when they get fused together, that's an Eldritch Moon. So that's like well progressed in the Eldrazi horror block, essentially. But they're always themed. And nowadays, I believe they just release like like online like blog stories, but they do have like professional writers like working on the storylines, and all the sets release kind of in those storylines. So when I mentioned the Gatewatch and these super best friends, they go through a lot of storylines together, basically.
I love that there's like a room full of writers like, no, the jellyfish is obviously a girl.
Yeah. Okay, but how do we show that? Maybe we give her big cans. God damn it, Jeffrey. Stop saying give Emrakul boobs, okay? God
yeah, damn. What if one jellyfish head on the top, there was two and there was little nipples on the top?
Yeah, but like we need to figure out, is like, are Ulamog's tits real or not?
Yeah. Jace, seeing a planeswalker battling against what he thought was simply a dragon, jumped to Chandra's aid. The battle was ferocious, with magic lashing out from the confluence to strike the carefully laid lines of Hedrons, which held the greater evils at bay.
Oh, so he's like setting it. He's the boss battle against the gigantic blind enemy that you need to get to charge into walls. Basically, so he's getting him to shoot strategically at the ley lines.
I mean, no, it's just like the three of them kind of battling having at it. Jamie, you mentioned keys earlier. Do you remember what the keys to unlock the prison were?
It's three sparks and the breath of an old thing.
So we've got three sparks. Jace doesn't know that we have three because he thinks it's just a dragon that he's fighting, not necessarily a planeswalker.
The invisible breath of Ugin that you need as well.
But he needs the invisible breath of Ugin. And this was like the biggest, dumbest this is the dumb revelation of the episode when I was reading the story. So some
you
of the
he did jar or like he has a balloon that he just like pops in the room or something.
I mean, I didn't look into the details, but essentially, yeah, I guess he had like stored up jars of like under the doormat. He just had like a jar labeled invisible dragon's breath. And it's like his spare piece, like hidden in a fake rock, you know,
yeah.
they find some there. So Chandra and Jace find some there and decide like, oh, we should use this to kill Sarkin, the dragon who's attacking us, right? Like, yeah, no problem. Let's do that. So three planeswalker sparks and invisible dragon's breath make for some unleashed Eldrazi titans, basically.
Uh-oh. I love the fact he's just got what is just like visibly an empty jar that he
farts in a jar.
Whips at just like, yeah, exactly. He's got gamer girl farts in a jar. And he just like whips it at this dragon.
I was picturing like an old balloon that was used to be up, but it kind of just slowly fell towards the ground.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pop
still
on the ground,
the string, yeah. Just like a tiny little balloon now.
Yeah.
So they unleash the invisible breath on Sarkin. They defeat him, but in doing so, unwillingly open the last lock on the Eldrazi confinement spell. The Eldrazi rise once more to feed on Zendikar. Across the plain, dormant stone Hedrons come to life, shifting and materializing into strange superstructures, bending the laws of nature around them. It's around this time that Sorin returned. So on the last episode, we were talking about Innistrad and what Sorin was doing over there, and we said, oh, then he goes to Zendikar for a while. And I said, I'm not going to talk about it. So he gets back. No Nahiri, whom he imprisoned in the Hell Vault. No Ugin, which I won't get into right now, but if I ever do an Ugin episode... Sorin turns to the resident elf Nissa Ravain, a planeswalker as well, to help him. She's an elf planeswalker, green aligned. She will eventually become a member of the Gatewatch as well.
Yeah, I've heard that name before, probably 2 years ago from you.
I did say it earlier today. I said, when I was trying to give you guys hints on the plane, I said, Ravain is from here.
You said Nissan Ravain because you just bought a new car.
So he gets Nissa to help him. His communication skills, as we probably determined on the last episode, could still use some work, however. While Sorin worked to reinforce the containment spell, Nissa struck the main Hedron binding them, thinking incorrectly that they would just up and flee, that they wanted to get out, that they were imprisoned and they just wanted to leave. Now, I vaguely recall the game Magic Duels of the Planeswalkers, which I do not know how canon it is, but it came out kind of coincided with these sets and did kind of tell the stories. I vaguely recall that Nissa also had some visions or some whisperings from the mountain. So probably Ulamog was like, no, we just want to leave. We don't belong here, you know? So Nissa decides like, oh, this guy trying to recontain them on my plane? No, thank you. I'd rather them be somewhere else. So she says they want to leave. They can go.
Go, my precious jellyfish, be free.
Yeah, yeah. Just throws them onto the pavement.
And just, yeah, just like flap, flap, and just dries out immediately.
She was a little right and a little wrong, I suppose you could say. The Eldrazi were willing to leave, but only after devouring enough of Zendikar to utterly annihilate it from.
Oh, she didn't check if they needed snacks.
Yeah, exactly.
Idiot.
They're like, no, we want to be freed and we want to leave, but we're gonna just destroy you before we go. That's all.
Yeah,
it's the one caveat, you know. It's about now that Soren's like, I'm washing my hands of this. He leaves, goes back to Innistrad, says, I don't want to deal with this anymore.
He's I tried.
Like, yeah, he's like, I imprisoned Nahiri. I didn't answer her calls in the first place. I come back here. I didn't effectively communicate what these things wanted or keep an eye on like the fledgling planeswalkers who were messing with things. I'm going to go. I'm going to go, basically.
Yeah. That's when everybody go crazy. I'm not a therapist. I'm out.
So he leaves the mess in Nissa's hands. Nissa was joined by three others, Chandra, Jace, and a fourth, Gideon Jura. Realizing they need to stand together, they each take on an oath to each other, and the Gatewatch is formed. Basically, in this moment of crisis is when they swear an oath to each other. In this set, there is five cards, or I think there's four cards in the Battle for Zendikar set, which is Oath of Nissa, Oath of Chandra, Oath of Jace, and Oath of Gideon, which all do different things. And then eventually you get an Oath of Liliana card, because she eventually joins the Gatewatch, just not off the get-go.
Well, she's hunting demons, right?
Exactly. She's hunting demons, if you guys will recall, on Innistrad right now.
She probably waits till the war is like almost won, then she steps in right at the last minute, pledges like, yeah, we did it! You know?
We did USA! It, guys, USA!
I wasn't going to say it. But...
That's like World War I.
Yeah, yeah. So while this is going on, while they're, you know, promising to be faithful to each other, Ulamog is rampaging across Zendikar, while Kozilek is lying in hiding, letting his scions do the destruction for him. So Kozilek has kind of like shifted himself under the tectonic plates of the plane. And is just like, no, I'm going to chill down here. Let my fingers poke up through the ice and like wiggle on the surface. whereas Ulamog is
reverse ice fishing.
Yeah.
Or it's like a knit blanket just with like fingers poking up through it.
Yeah, yeah. Ulamog's rampaging across Zendikar. Emrakul, however, simply vanishes from the plane. She gets up and leaves whenever Nissa frees him.
Okay, leaving... so Jellyfish is be free.
Jellyfish is be free, yeah.
Okay, sweet.
She leaves the other two to complete the destruction. The planeswalkers assembled all the able-bodied men and women across Zendikar to try and beat back the Eldrazi, but it was proving a losing battle. Jace realized that they could not hope to splinter out and stand against all the forces of the Eldrazi, but needed to make a single concerted effort. So he goes back to the Eye of Ugin to see if he could piece together the clues of how it had been used in the first place when he, and this is kind of a theme with this place, finds it occupied. Anybody want to take a guess?
Oh,
Ugin himself is in the chamber. We're working to rebuild both it and the Hedron network. So he's a little late to the summons, but he gets there and he sees just like his lab in disarray, his fart jars all smashed.
Yeah.
All pissed off. The spirit dragon.
They're all labeled like dragon.
Masking tape with a Sharpie on them.
Yeah, Dragon, Ugin, Indy Fox, Amaranth.
Invisible farts.
Yeah. So the Spirit Dragon reveals how the network might be used again to immobilize the Titans, but Jace realizes that it can do more. He says, why don't we use it to kill them? Trapping them is the first step. Then we go on to kill them, right? You can't teach an old dragon new tricks. Ugin warns Jace against destroying them, saying that doing so would have untold consequences throughout the multiverse. Again, we don't, as far as I could find, don't have any canon reason for this.
So this is kind of responsible, though, because if they're coming from the place between planes, maybe, and they just consume mana and leave behind, like, this drained debris, maybe he's right in being like, hey, man, I don't know where they came from. He's listening to your heart. Like, I don't know where you came from and I don't know why, but he's just like, he definitely understands that like, maybe if we kill these things, the planes will just like dissolve or whatever. So it might be responsible to the,
it could be an ecosystem.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, you're like literally witnessing them like turn people into horrible flesh monsters and like like the worst possible end to your life is seeing one of these things like show up in town, you know? So
yeah,
I don't want to both sides it, Peter, but I can see both sides, you know? So yeah, Ugin's like, it might be a balanced ecosystem. We would just want to trap them for now until we can learn more, even though they trap them and never spent any effort in studying them or anything like that. Although maybe too dangerous to study, right? So they recruit another local planeswalker, the merfolk Kiora. Jace describes the ley line pattern that they would devise to draw the bulk of the Eldrazi into the plane so that their energy could be dispersed into it, effectively killing them. So they're okay. Like, we're going to draw them in, trap them again, and then once they're in, we're going to like disperse that out, not keep like them concentrated in one spot. No, like disperse them out into the plane. So like rather than keep them just in the eye of Ugin in that one concentrated location where their forms are like manifested and can hold steady, just like thin them out throughout the plane, like super, super wide, and it'll just like destroy them. They won't be able to hold on to themselves anymore.
Okay.
So all they need was the bait. Gideon gets to work clearing out swaths of Eldrazi swarms with Kiora and Chandra supporting, and the Gatewatch successfully managed to anchor the Titans to Zendikar. So some of them show up and are like, hey, we're the bit, we're the force that's going to fight you and kill you. Look at us. Hey, look at us over here, you know? And they distract them long enough that Jace, can enact the plan and trap them basically. Jace and Nyssa. So Nyssa like moves the Hedrons into position. There's a card called Large Hedron Network or something like that, which is some great artwork of, you see like Ulamog standing in this, like what's called the Seagate, which is like this like basin at the bottom of a waterfall. And there's just like all these Hedrons like circling in around them, basically like hemming them in to this one spot. Cool. But yeah, they get them to that point, and then they say like, okay, we're ready to pull the switch and spread them out. It's Kiora who first notices the implications of such a feat. The immense destructive power of the Titans threatened all of Zendikar. They risk pulling the plane into the Titans as much as the Titans into the plane. Jace's plan would effectively threaten to destroy Zendikar as well, and all of its inhabitants as much as it would destroy the Titan. So Jace is not from Zendikar. He's from Ravnica. And he's like, yeah, let's, you know, this plane was great, but we got to sacrifice it for the greater good. Meanwhile, Kiora, planeswalker, local, is like, this seems a bit intense, right?
I'm with Jace so far, dude. These are some badass fucking Lovecraftian monsters. And one plane for all of that gone?
Untold numbers, yeah.
As far as we know, the last time they tried to imprison these fucking things, they didn't, like, put, like, whatever, they didn't seal up the wall properly, and then, psychic magic poured into the drinking water, and everybody went crazy. Yeah. Exactly. All those coomers came out of the mountain, and then they all went nuts and let them go.
I'll be cooming around the mountain when I come.
Around the mountain when I coom. So Kiora protests. Tries to convince Nyssa to free the Titans. Nyssa, again, another local to Zendikar, to let them flee the plane to save the souls of those on Zendikar, even if it threatens all the planes in the multiverse. So Kiora is kind of in the, let's free them. We can lure them to another plane without so many people, and like we'll deal with them there.
There's no time to get the civilians and nature out of the way.
Yeah. Chandra, thankfully, had another solution. It's the same solution as always for her. It's fire. She's just going to use fire on them. With Nyssa's help, Chandra channels her pyromancy along the ley lines of the plane itself, which were trapping the Titans. Okay. In one blinding flash of fire, Ulamog and Kozilek are incinerated, leaving only ashes of them raining from Zendikar's sky. So Chandra just like, oh, I'll just fuck them up. Don't worry, guys. We're good. I'm just going to fuck them up. Okay.
I don't know why we even hired this mermaid. Just I'll take care of it.
Of course, whether the flames actually destroyed them or just their planar avatars, and if, like, again, the man has just lost his hand now and is walking around with a stump in the blind eternities, bumping into stop signs and calling his lawyer, it's hard to tell. But they defeated them on Zendikar, at least for the time being. So while all this is happening, on an unassuming plane called Innistrad, a vampire is killing an angel. You guys will recall Sorin unmade his creation Avacyn. Nahiri, freed from her imprisonment at Sorin's hands, had been hard at work, if you guys remember. Nahiri had been spreading cryptoliths throughout the plane to draw the Eldrazi to Innistrad.
Right. Those are the little pillars that she was making.
Exactly. While Sorin still held the body of his creation, Avacyn, Maddened by the eldritch powers which now racked his realm, Emrakul had arrived on Innistrad. And maybe that's where we'll pick up on my next episode. Because again, a lot more there, but I didn't want to cut it too short. So thanks so much for listening, everybody. We've been the Lore Boys. You can find all our info at loreboys.com/about. In particular, look out for the Discord link. It's our most active social. And the best way to get in touch with us is either that or contact@loreboys.com. You may have heard reference in this episode to 200th episode, whatever strange horror-bending reality that might be, that we've made it to 200 episodes. More details on that to come. We have some very abstract thoughts still in the bank. We're hoping to release it soon with the big old Lore Boys TM on that one.
Do
stay tuned. We'll definitely announce it before it comes out. It might just be a small announcement on this feed. It may just come out on this feed, but it'll definitely get announced in Discord. So feel free to head to loreboys.com/about to find more info on us and the show. And if you liked it, tell your friends, leave a review, spread the good word. Jamie, is there anything you'd like to share with the class today, besides the fact that you're not wearing pants, young man?
If you go on the internet, you can Google anything. Peter, what do you got?
When you say Google anything, where can I look up what Google is?
I'd go to Bing for that. Okay, good. You can look at what Google is, and then from Google you can get to loreboys.com, where you can see all of our socials and get in the Discord. The Discord's where we're at. Chat with people every day. Today we're talking about Stardew Valley, is a new game coming out from that same developer called Chocolatier, and I have a petition to rename it Chocolate Stardew and the Hot Dog Flavored Water.
Okay,
so you let me know if that'll work or not. It looks just like Stardew, so I think it's a perfect fit. But anyways, that's it for me. How about you, Pete?
At Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram if you want to check out our title cards and leave us likes, send us messages, whatever. Big thank you to everybody who has watched the interview that we did. We did a live show on October 24th at Meltdown in Montreal. It was a great event. Eric with a K from Discord actually made it in person to meet us, and we got to meet his fiance. Wonderful time. Thank you so much. We're going to be doing more live events in the future with Squared primarily, but like maybe we'll be able to organize our own one day. So if anybody wants to reach when it's legal to travel, it's fun, and it was a great time. Otherwise, we are doing another live stream. We are doing... what is it? Extra Life. On November 6th, 2021, we'll be raising charity to get rid of sick kids one way or another. I'll be playing The Surge 2. And then I guess we'll be doing some Hollow Knight Randomizer and a little variety show with Jimbo. So if you want to check out twitch.tv/theloreboys on November 6th, we're going to be pretty much all day raising money for a good cause.
Yeah, mostly I'm going to be ASMR here. Anyways,
I'm going to be smacking my lips in this mic, and Jamie's going to be smacking his lips in that mic. Yeah. So, Jamie, you want to hit him with a little preview?
Absolutely not. I hate mouth noises in anything, and I would not want to subject anyone to that.
Yeah. Unless it's Amaranth's mouth noises, right?
Oh, those are
different. Isn't that what I understood?
Yeah.
Okay, sure, yeah. Amaranth's mouth, always taking it to another level, as we stated earlier on the show.
Innovator.
Y'all wrapped up there, Pete? Done talking, huh?
That's it. Check out the stream November 6th, 2021. Thank you to Squared Idea. Thank you to Eric and everybody who's checked out the interview that we did. And that's it.
If you're looking for a place to dump all your cash before we start raising money for sick kids, so you don't have to feel guilty about not donating, we do have a Patreon as well. Patreon.
Yeah, we'll launder your money for you.
Patreon.com/theloreboys. You can head there to support us with some scratch. Big shout out as always to everybody who does. Means the heckin' world. And you know, we wouldn't let reality warp it for anyone, but for you, maybe. Anybody who doesn't like that, doesn't like Patreon, doesn't like the idea of giving... Who owns Patreon? I was going to say Mr. Bezos, but that's just an assumption. Probably not, right?
No, it's someone else.
If you don't like the idea of giving that someone else guy your money, hate that guy, then we do have Lore Boys Prime, our subscription-based service where...
Hate that fucking jellyfish.
Yeah. Where we offer you guys something special every single week, so... Pete's mentioned a few times now, he is giving out jellyfish. I believe Jamie has some bismuth crystals to give out this week. Mm-hmm. I couldn't afford real coral reef. It's surprisingly expensive for a service that we don't actually collect any money on. But I have papier-mâché. That's how it's pronounced, guys. Okay.
Yeah, it's French for newspaper oatmeal. That's what it's made of. It's a delicacy.
So I've got some newspaper oatmeal bleached coral reef. The bleach completely destroyed the paper, just dissolved it to nothing. So it looks very eldritch, but in matching with spooky season, we'll do your Halloween decorations for you guys. We got live jellyfish, bismuth, which I don't know if it's valuable or not, but Jamie said he's willing to shell out for it. And I'll do the newspaper oatmeal.
Last I heard, like, bleached newspaper is kind of just paper, but without the news.
Whoa,
you know?
Dude.
Last I heard, we've talked about this before. Just
blew my fucking socks off with that one. You're right. You're right. Oh my God. Mulch it up. I invented paper. I independently invented paper. And I need you, Jamie, to be the businessman for me, because clearly I'm a walking invention machine. And
take the paper. Take the paper. Slice it. It'll be the best thing since sliced paper.
Okay. What if I take my speakers out back, smash them with a sledgehammer? What did I just invent, Jamie?
Sound? I have no idea what you're going for.
Well, I mean, for a short amount of time, I did invent sound. I guess the speakers were producing sound for a time, so I used speakers to invent speakers. Okay. Yeah. I like it.
That works. Temporary speakers. Disposable speakers.
Yeah, exactly.
don't worry, Pete. I'm working on an invention to get that crucifix around your second shin, though. Okay, buddy.
Please.
I think that would constitute a lore boys.
Lore boys.
Out.
Out.
Hi, my name's James, and this is what my voice sounds like on your drive at 5 on the radio station.
My name's Ethan. If I was a radio DJ, I would nasally pitch my voice up, because people wouldn't like it, but it would be memorable, which could sell products.
True.
My name's Terry DeMonte. I'm overweight, and I are retired from Shome to host the Lore Boys podcast after Peter died in a car accident.
That is true. Self auto fixating himself.
Yeah. In the car.
Mm-hmm.
The old seatbelt trick.
Yeah. put the seatbelt around my neck, then stop really fast.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. it's when you activate the ratchet. That's when it gets really dangerous, right?
Yeah.
When you pull it out too far and it starts to click itself. Yeah.
Oh no! Help! Help! Imagine the police officer who has to find that. It's like, oh, always going to be like his last day before retirement. Just like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.